I was just recording the conference.
Oh, okay. And that has been squarely focused on issues related to security in the payments environment. And it started out probably in early January of last year when I had conversations with an organization based in Greece that had developed a rules-based engine to support transaction activity in the merchant acquirer rule, doing things like velocity checks and using neural fuzzy logic to help provide additional risk management capabilities. They were looking to have a distributor set up in the United States, and they wanted to use me as that. As a matter of fact, Piers and I had a couple conversations about that. But long and the short of it was that they just had some problems getting market traction here in the U.S. And so they were trying to compete with organizations like Falcon and ACI's proactive risk manager. So that, and the, you know, my interest in the risk management systems from the merchant acquire perspective really started back a couple of years ago when I had an opportunity to do some work with Kroger's, and they were looking to build a reconciliation system, proprietary reconciliation system on an enterprise-wide basis. And the interesting thing about their requirement specs was that they wanted to have risk management embedded in the recon so that they could proactively look at transaction activities in their environment and basically challenge the authorizations that MasterCard and Visa were providing to them. That whole venue led me into kind of rekindling a relationship with my buddy Don Gleason, who some of you, tracking back to the, you know, the heyday of the formation of regional networks, he was one of the regional network commandos, and he was working with an authentication technology that uses a one-time password that's delivered through the SMS text messaging on a mobile phone. And he had, his organization was focused on the, he was the head of the financial services group for his company and asked us to come in and help them look at using that authentication for mobile banking and mobile payments, particularly for large transfers of money. And his company ended up folding because they were involved in the commercial real estate space. But I've been in contact with Don over the last year or so, and they have been and partnered with him to see if we can take that authentication technology into the healthcare space, because there's a need for a securitized mechanism that meets all the HIPAA standards and to provide doctors with access to medical records. So my most current activity has been looking at opportunities to leverage authentication technology in that space. And
hey, I hate to interject, but doesn't this take us back to Bert in
It absolutely does, and I just in the last week got a response from Bert to an email message that I sent to him back in the October timeframe when it looked like we were going to get kind of head first into this. As a matter of fact, Kendall and I had some conversations about whether there were any of the old, you know, documents from the CHMIS formation discussions, and a lot of that, you know, I mean, it's really just a matter of repackaging, but looking at how this authentication capability can actually be applied to that. So, and Bert, you know, Bert sent kind of a cute note to me saying that he was spending a lot of time still trying to get involved in things of that nature, but his work has taken him more into the construction business, which is kind of a sideline discussion. But the other thing that I've been doing most recently is focusing again on misauthentication. You know, what I've found is that where PCI compliance is concerned and the challenges that merchants across the board have had meeting those requirements, I've only seen two areas where merchants or merchant acquirers are spending any money, and it's on PCI compliant audits and any kind of security that can help combat fraud. So I have been focusing on the most recently what I've done is develop a white paper discussion, which I'm hoping is going to be picked up by the NRF. I'm kind of in a review process with them right now. But what it's an industry white paper that talks about things that merchants can do to combat fraud in their environment. And essentially the message is surrounding areas, development areas relative to end-to-end encryption, tokenization, and authentication. And Paul Reamer and I have been collaborating on that activity and hoping that we might get some traction from either the processor or the merchant community to endorse that and hopefully lead to some specific project work on that front.
Okay.
So that's kind of a gun spray on my end.
So at the end of the day, it's all about security, right? Particularly from the acquirer side?
Yes. There's no question that's the case. And everyone's got a different threshold relative to where they want to spend their money. And can any of these things help them get out of scope so they can reduce costs associated with PCI compliance?
Well, I'd be this is Piers.
Piers who? No.
Oh, yeah, Piers who.
Hello, hello.
I'd be happy to share a Mercantor, or no, Mercator advisory group, merchant banking, saving money amid the computer constraints. I'll just flip it off to you guys after this conversation, but it deals with merchant switching versus outsource, most of it is down to, I think, the Marias, the Pauls, the whoever's, but I think it's kind of like an interesting insight into, if you want to save 15% to 20% to 30% of your outsource switching, your outsource processing as a merchant, assuming you're tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, I think this has some interesting collateral, and I'll just send it off to you guys.
Cool, thanks.
That'd be great.
It's December 2008, but so that means it's fairly current.
Yep. That'd be great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey,
when I read it, I thought, hey, Paul, in particular, and Walt, plus others, hey, this is it's a tech sale. Do you insource or outsource? It's fairly well argued, so I'll flip it on to you guys.
And just on that point, Piers, what was really interesting to me, because I just got back from the NRF show in New York, and what I heard a lot of merchants talking about was this idea that they might use the managed solution and outsource all of their processing that was associated with authorization, because they just trying to get around this PCI compliance is a really big issue. So I'm wondering if whether the outsource service provision now is something that is going to become much more top of mind. We've spent decades building centralized switches and so that retailers could bring all that processing in-house. And we may be seeing a complete fundamental shift away from that capability strictly because of fraud-related issues.
Well, yeah, and relative to PCI in particular, I think this paper as far as Mercator is concerned, addresses it. Okay?
Okay.
I'd yield to people like Paul in particular.
Hey, I'm here. I just joined. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hey, Paul.
I'd yield to those who know technology better than I do as to, you know, how you would interpret this paper. But I'll flip it on to you guys. But I think it's an opportunity to those in the group that, you know, that have a merchant focus and have an ability to sell.
Well, God knows I have an ability to buy.
Well, come on. Everybody's going to be a buyer. Come on.
Sooner or later.
We're in a positive streak in 2010.
That's right. You got everybody buys. So, Stuart, what have you been up to?
Well, not as much as I'd like to be.
That's why we're on the call.
Yeah, exactly. So I've been playing a lot in the remittance space, and that's the everything from the classic Western Union Internet, and it's international remittance, because domestic remittances are like 3% of the total. There's no market there, and there's no market within any individual country for internal remittances. So this is all international. And it's everything from the classic to the emerging. And where I've been trying to put a little bit of attention, and I was hoping maybe somebody on the call could tell me, is whether PopCash has got any traction and whether it might be a means of using the mobile cellular telephone as a way to do remittances and cut that cost from the $15 to $20, maybe as low as 10, depending on your market, but cutting it down from 20 to $10 transaction down to 2. And that would totally disrupt the market. But what I don't know, and something I'm researching, is whether PopCash is getting any traction and whether they're going to expand beyond the two banks that they already have. I believe it's PNC and First Hawaiian that are participating in PopCash right now. Yeah, does anybody know?
It's Pop Money.
Pop Money, yeah.
Cash Edge claims to have 5 guys in the queue behind these folks.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And
I was just wondering if anybody went to the BAI show and noticed whether there was any traction around their booth.
Maria, don't you know somebody at Cash Edge?
I can't pull it up to the frontal lobe right now, but my intersection with the remittance world came from a small project that I worked with Union Bank, because expedited payments is something that has impacted both the online banking world as well as the pure remittance space that you're operating in, Stuart. And I had an opportunity, I pitched a job with MoneyGram to work in that space, and wasn't able to get that off the ground and running. I don't know about I may have a contact at Cash Edge. I need to I'll put a note in my I do know a person there, a business development guy.
Yeah. The other thing I've been doing is working with some of the classic issuers in cleaning up their operations.
Yeah.
I did get some traction last year, nothing this year, but last year, meaning 2008, with a bank that wanted to clean up its ATM operation. It's just a classic project of, how do you improve your ATM availability? It harks back to stuff that we were doing back in the 90s. And it's surprising to me, they didn't want to get the discussion ranged around getting into some newer fields, and they said, geez, we'd like to clean up our operations that we already have before we start to do anything with new payment systems. And, all right, fine. So that was a small project, but it's something that at least paid the bills for a couple of months.
Well, this is Piers, and I'm in contact with Winkel Nixdorf, both in Europe and in the USA.
Mm-hmm.
in particular with a an agency, Wink or Nixdorf distributor, the southeast, although that doesn't necessarily exclude anywhere else. But the short answer is, cleaning up ATM operations. Wink or Nixdorf, big push as of, 6 months ago was, just punch your checks into our ATMs and they automatically print you out a receipt, all the rest of that good stuff. I'm not sure whether that's what you mean by cleaning up ATM operations, but, obviously cash in, cash out is easy. Deposit a check is the front line nowadays, I think. And Wink or Nixdorf appear to believe that they have a superior solution. So, get back to me on that some other time.
Right.
But this
was more from the perspective of the bank with a fleet of ATMs and trying to figure out,
Wink or Nixdorf, being German, whatever the financial situation in the USA is nowadays, of course they'll do the, we'll put the machine in there, we'll do it for nothing, and we'll charge you so much a pop.
Yep.
So for a regional bank, this is a steal of a deal.
Right.
If they want to take it.
Right.
The detail of that, don't ask me to get into. But, it's basically you want to swap out all your ATMs for check deposit capability. They'll do it, and they'll do it on a per-pop basis.
Yeah, everybody.
Priya, you were trying to interject?
Yeah, I, on the cash edge front, or on
Hello?
There?
On the cash edge front with pop money, what is it that you're trying to find out? Where are you looking for some additional help? On whether they're getting traction in the remittance space?
No, whether they're getting traction at all with their product, because they're going to need, in order for this to work in the remittance space, where I think it's a natural, is they're going to have a significant base of participating banks in the United States where at least the bank population in the United States can say, yeah, I can use pop money to post money on my wife's cell phone down in Costa Rica or El Salvador.
Yep.
And then from there, once it's posted on her cell phone, she can find an agency at the other end, which would be a bank at the other end that she doesn't necessarily bank with, but can serve as the distributor for that.
I have I'm actually in the process of trying to do some work with Net Deposit, who just bought formed an alliance partnership with a company called Remit Home. And they're doing a similar kind of thing with the Philippines.
Right.
So what I'll do is I'll talk to my contacts there and see if they have any sense of what's developing on that end. I would imagine, to John's point, because it's a cash edge product, that the banks that they'd try to get on board would first and foremost be those that are their clients on the account aggregation side.
Here's another thing I've been thinking about in the remittance market, but I haven't been able to play with it just yet. But think to a point of sale device at a supermarket or any other merchant location. This point of sale device where you enter in your PIN and swipe your card and do all that wonderful stuff, but right now it doesn't provide a balance inquiry. If you could reach out into the remittance space and find out that there is a balance out there waiting to be collected, that would mean that people, instead of having to go to the Western Union office markets where they get mugged after they picked up their cash, they could go to any merchant, the Walmart in Guatemala City, determine whether they've got a balance, and they know that they do because their husband just called them and said, I've just made a deposit and remittance area, whether it's by Western Union or any other company, just have to give them the numbers. Then they could make purchases directly at the supermarket or other merchant location and not have to worry about being robbed on their way home. It's kind of like not making the stop at the ATM, going directly and getting your cash and paying your stuff and being safer in the process. So that's another space where in this time it's the point of sale device that's used as the distributing mechanism, rather than the Western Union office with an internet connection that gives you the cash, and then you walk out with your cash and get mugged, which is a real problem. I mean, it's truly a real problem.
That's sort of what Regalo Card's doing.
Right.
Pardon me?
Regalo card,
yeah.
out of Florida.
Yeah.
Listen, Usher, you know, with respect to doing this sort of thing on a cross-border basis, you have to be really sensitive to the position of the regulators in those countries. Certainly, in India, where I've spent some of my time, as you guys know. The regulator is pretty active in looking at questions like cashback at point of sale, which they just approved, and quite separately at all forms of cross-border flows, particularly those happening on mobile phones, because there's a big concern about both money laundering, but even more importantly, anti-terrorism funding.
Yep.
So, you know,
those are very real security concerns, and they have to be built into the system. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, but I mean, not so much that
worldwide.
That you build security into the system. It's that the security that we typically build into the system is for the remitter or the remittee. But the scenario here is that the regulators are more concerned about security relative to the monetary system as a whole, or to crime within the country.
That's
so
right.
Not so much a pure technology issue, because in effect one could make the argument that the more secure you make the transaction relative to protecting its privacy, the more challenged the regulatory authorities become. So on the one hand, they want it to be a secure transaction when it's the good guys doing it. But on the other hand, they want to be able to, monitor, access, control, whatever, the transaction when the bad guys are doing it.
Right, right. That's true of any remittance program that you try to establish today. The U.S. government's got the same concern, and because most of this is coming out of the U.S., flowing to other countries, you just have to deal with it right up front.
Well, just bear in mind, guys, that I have a historical, possibly historical interest, as some of you know, with transactions to a certain island offshore.
Mm-hmm.
But if you need any detailed knowledge of what the legal situation is relative to currently U.S. legislation, you might want to talk to me.
Yeah,
because you don't want to end up on the UBS list.
it's not me personally, anyway. It's leave that aside. No, I don't.
So, Paul, what's up with you? What have you been doing, man?
Hey, I've been hanging in there. Been doing okay. Just real quick snapshot. I had a real good run through probably the summer last year, and then things pretty much fell off the cliff for me for a few months. But I did pick up a project, which I have had to, the only thing I have going right now, which is which I've had to cut my rates and also pick up my own travel expenses. So I'm just, but it's keeping me afloat here right now. So it's a pretty interesting topic, though. I've been the last couple months been working in the area of encryption and tokenization of credit card and debit card data, magstripe data, PAN, and a retailer processor environment. It's very interesting. Today there's tremendous pressures on retailers and processors to protect card data within the confines of their payments architecture. And it's primarily driven by PCI requirements and the desire to reduce the scope of PCI audits for the retailer processor. Interestingly, a properly implemented tokenization solution can reduce the scope of a PCI audit by as much as 75%. For a retailer processor. And the way that it does this is it removes the card data from being stored in the clear or transmitted in the clear between the various retailer processor systems and the infrastructures, for example, you know, the switch, the settlement, reconciliation, and so forth, and basically replacing it with a token or an encrypted version of the PAN. So, What's emerging in that space right now is a model that combines tokenization and encryption usage at the same time. Basically, encryption is for moving the transaction around in the message between systems, and tokenization is where it's being stored on a transaction log, et cetera. You know. Also worth mentioning in this space, there's regarding end-to-end encryption, that's been another hot topic and related topic in the industry, but ANSI X9 has a working group where they are working on an end-to-end encryption standard, basically what the concept is that the data gets, you know, the transaction-sensitive data, primarily the magstripe, is encrypted at the point of sale or at the ATM, and it stays encrypted all the way out to the issuer, and the issuer is the only one that knows really what the clear text PAN is, basically. And then they provide, for example, a token back to the acquirer side, to the merchant, for storage on their systems and things like that. That's going to obviously take quite a while to get going, you know, because to get everybody on the same page is really going to be a challenge. And especially with the issuer side, because they're even further behind, I think, even though they have, in a sense, less to do. But there's a lot of disillusionment from what I hear from, you know, around the industry, from some clients and other contacts with processors and retailers with PCI. They're just very fed up with it because the cost keeps going up for being in compliance, but it does not prevent successful hacks from occurring. They just keep on coming, you know. So that's kind of really led to the whole movement for ANSI to pursue this new end-to-end encryption standard. It's basically, the way I understand it, it's going to leverage the same infrastructure as PIN debit, in other words, using the same keys or the same key infrastructure and host security modules and doing PIN translation or data translations at each step along the way. So that'll be interesting to see what they come up with there, but there's a lot changing right now in this area. So it's been it's an interesting area. I think there's really, this is starting to catch on now. They're starting to really get some traction here. So that's pretty much, in a nutshell, my situation. So,
hey, Paul?
Yes, sir.
Oh, sure. Anybody being successful in creating a sort of PCI black box, if you want to call it that, that can be set in front of or work in conjunction with existing EFT platforms?
Well, yeah, I think so, Nosha. I mean, I would say that the concept of the tokenization is along the lines, because what you basically have is the black box being the tokenization service, or what they sometimes call a vault, like a credit card vault, or, you know, something along those lines. It's basically in a sense, a server with host security modules, et cetera. And basically, it just keeps a a table reference of PANs to token values, and then it's stored and encrypted. So basically, all the systems that need to interface to that, they have to interface to that at each step along the way to do what they need to do. So today, these solutions, being that you don't have too much cross, too much implementation going from a merchant to a processor, although there are some fairly big announcements with First Data, Payment Tech that are supporting tokenization now, that they're more geared, from what I've seen, towards a smaller merchant, but the bigger merchant, the bigger retailers or processors are, you know, that's what they do. What they do is they push the only place, ideally, the only place that the sensitive data is stored is in the vault. So therefore, your switch, potentially, your point-of-sale environment or ATM, your settlement, recon, those can all potentially go out of scope for the PCI audit. They are no longer need to be included in the audit because they don't store any sensitive data. They just store tokenized data.
So what's the forecast for whether or not Square is going to be a successful implementation, given what you just said about, you know, re-strengthening PCI?
While Maria's laughing, that last conversation between Paul and Nosha, again, look at the note I'm going to send you. I'm not going to do it while we're talking. You guys can look at it later, but it's Mercator. I'll send it to all you guys, and I think, well, I don't know. No, it's a commercial paper, so it probably doesn't answer the sorts of questions that either Nosha or Paul would want to ask, but it may go some way toward that. So let me forward it on, and you guys look at it, and then come back and crap on my whatever. Okay.
Okay. Cool.
I don't know how to address the forecast side of things. I can tell you that from what I've learned, there are some pretty big retailers that do support tokenization now, and they include Target, Staples, UPS. I think.
I don't understand. This is me. I don't understand what you mean by tokenization. I just look at
I'll try that. Basically, what
interesting, or could it not be, Paul?
Tokenization, the idea is that you take the PAN, primary account number, let's say it's 16 digits, you basically encrypt it, if you will, you've encrypted, scramble the contents of it, or just provide a reference number as an equivalent to it, and use it in place, every place in the switch, the settlement system, the recon system, point of sale, that you would store that data or you would transmit it. You use that reference number, cross-reference number of the token value to the PAN. And the only place that you can go back, if you have a token and you need to get back to the PAN, you have to go back to the tokenization service and say, okay, here's the token, give me back, what's the clear text PAN here? So, for example, if a retailer is doing tokenization, they may at the, let's say for it was a website, they would, upon entry of the PAN at the website by the customer, it would take that PAN, go out to the tokenization service and say, give me a token value for this, and it would store it. And then it would store it in the tokenization service. It would bring it back to the web server, and then the web server would go up to the payment switch with the token. But before the switch goes out to the processor for an authorization, it has to translate it back to a clear text value, because typically processors can't handle tokenized data, you know. Another way of doing that is with encryption, and it's a little bit different approach. So that's where I was saying there's a kind of a model emerging that has, you know, where you have advantages of tokenization and encryption together. So it's basically
okay, well, whatever. I'm going to send all you guys a copy. You know, it'll be an enclosure. I'm not going to do it while we're talking, but I'll send you all a copy of this Mercator, whatever it is, paper, post-call. I'd certainly appreciate any and all feedback on that. I think it's actually quite useful, but there you go.
Yeah, I've seen the Mercator report, but please send it anyway. I don't know if I have a hard copy of it. But what Paul's talking about is really in the sweet spot of what is being discussed now in the merchant processing industry. The one,
but, you know, the only, and it comes back to the note I sent a couple of minutes ago, or you know, 15 minutes ago. I have actually pretty good contacts with a couple of software companies out of Europe that appear to feel they have some edge on this. Okay. Yeah, whether or not that's real or not is for the judgment of people like Paul.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk to you about that, Pierce, because what I've done is there are some guys in the industry that provide that are, for example, RSA, they're a big player and one of the leaders. They don't really have switching technology, although they're in the e-commerce space, but it's a different division.
Whatever. I've shared what I've got, okay? I haven't shared the actual paper, but I'll share the paper, and Maria's already got it, obviously. Whatever it is, I'll share whatever it is, and you know, I think there is an opportunity in here somewhere in the light of the conversation, given merchants, whether they be Walmart or Tier 3, are seriously challenged by, if nothing else, just complying to the
PCI.
Say again.
PCI requirement.
Yeah. Just complying to that. If they could feel they got over that via their provider, whoever their provider was, then I think there's a real open market here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, Kendall, what's up with you?
Last year was an interesting year for me. After I did a couple things that were sort of off normal strategy, but probably the most relevant for this conversation is that last year ended a year-plus-long engagement with Interac, where I helped them. Basically, what started out is, hey, we need help with pricing strategy for the products, which is sort of a normal thing that I do.
I hate this, Kendall. What are you doing working with Interac? They're my client.
Are they?
Well, they were until you came along.
Well, I don't know if it was because of me. They find themselves in an interesting space because Visa, MasterCard are finally making a serious push to get into the debit space there. Obviously, they have a monopoly on the space, and they don't know how to compete against Visa, MasterCard because they've never had to do it.
Right.
So what happened was, as I said, it started out as a, hey, help us reprice our products, to help us come up with an overarching strategy, and then help us they have, as they've made public since, have decided to become a for-profit entity. And to do that, they need to get new shareholders. They need to get new shareholders. So their current owner banks have to turn into private equity investors. And so in doing so, what they need is they needed to put together a new independent board so that that board could make all of the decisions pertaining to this new entity. I ended up helping run that board and sort of was on the hook for getting them to make all of their agreements So that it was an interesting board. Of note, Ron Congemi sat on the board. It was basically a bunch of payments, high-end payments folk, mostly from Canada, but there were a couple people from the U.S. And spent, you know, God, 9 months every other week sequestered in a room with them, trying to flesh out the overarching strategy and the pricing strategy and all that kind of stuff. It's an interesting market.
Have you got this?
What's that?
Yet? Because if not, and this is no interest from me at all, but I could certainly introduce John Hardy, and so could various others around this forum, but certainly John Hardy, ex of Link, who would, in his now retired and non-exec capacity, input anything he wants to know, anything you guys wants to know about the UK/European structure.
Well, I'd love that introduction, if only to chit-chat with him and talk to him about what's been going on. I'm actually not working – well, I take that back. I do very little for Interact right now because they're basically on hold with their plans because of a few different things. One is they need technology infrastructure to support all the things that they want to do. As you know, they're not a central switch, and so the idea that because of that, they don't see all their transactions and they want to.
All I'm saying is, you know, in a past role, I'm not sure whose role it was, but I did put Link and Interact in communication with one another, and would be pleased to do so again.
That'd be great.
Even though John Hardy is now a retired and rich person.
Even better. I appreciate that. Anyway, so I did that for, as I said, about a little over a year. It was quite interesting just to, you know, for once finally work with a market-dominant company to try to compete against Visa and MasterCard because you can do a few more things. Turn that around to the end of last year, I was working with ATH in Puerto Rico to basically do the same thing, which was they came in and said, hey, we're getting all this pressure from Visa and MasterCard in the market. How do we compete against them? Now, they're market dominant in a sense, but not with the kind of power that or brand that Interact had. So I've been working a little bit with them more on an advisory role than doing anything specific. But that's been also interesting. So that's sort of where I've been playing. It's not far from what Nosher and I used to do all the time. It's still keeping me busy. And in the middle of that, I helped save the world's fish population by working on a payments non-related project.
Well, hey, listen, is Stuart going to leap in here and tell you about his contacts in Middle America?
Yeah, I've got a number of them in Puerto Rico. I've been working with, Ivan Torres from ITS Systems. Some of you people may remember that from way back in the 90s. Still a client of mine, still working in that marketplace, and his biggest single competitor is ATH. So it's kind of kept me out of ATH's wheelhouse because it's regarded pretty much as a conflict.
They
are so conflicted with one another. However, if there's something I can do behind the scenes in that area, I know ATH has really screwed up its acquiring fees, which has limited its ability to get other banks other than themselves. They're the dominant bank. ATH is run by Banco Popular, and it's the dominant bank within Puerto Rico.
Which, by the way, Banco Popular
really
is in trouble.
They don't want to play with them because of the interchange levels. It's been structured in such a way that Visa and MasterCard in the old days would have been proud of the way it was structured for their benefit. and their benefit alone. And
yeah,
that's why Visa and MasterCard are able to get some inroads against them.
Yeah, except, I mean, so their pricing for their debit product is high compared to the rest of the world, no doubt.
Yes.
And they have, there's no caps on their fees. So it's
right.
Just straight, you know, I mean, there's different levels, but it basically ranges from like 65 basis points to 95 basis points
right.
Per transaction just for the interchange. And,
right.
But there's no cap on that. So that's a big difference. Now, the Visa MasterCard product, they're only pushing signature debit there. They're not pushing PIN. And
right.
So they're priced at, you know, 120 basis points and up. And so, you know, from a competition standpoint, it's the only debit network that actually has semi-competitive interchange compared to Visa MasterCard. But
right.
That doesn't mean that they're winning, right?
Yeah.
The merchants aren't happy. Banco Popular has like 55% of the network business.
Yeah.
So to give you an understanding, and quite honestly, Banco Popular is thinking about switching to Visa.
Well, okay.
There goes the ATH network.
Well,
right.
If Banco Popular goes away, that network is gone.
Well, hold on. There's a Banco Popular is thinking to switch to MasterCard. There's a brand pricing issue there, which Mac could have a role in. Leave that aside. Both I and others, particularly Stu, have been looking at in relation to a couple of initiatives in the Caribbean area in terms of acquiring. Maybe we take that up at another time, but, you know, just flag it and we'll go on.
And I also have had a decent amount of experience in the Latin American market, not like Stuart has, but I helped a couple of years ago, got it more than that now, but for those who aren't up to date on some of the stuff that I've done, I helped MasterCard do all of their repricing for the Latin American and the Caribbean region.
Okay, and don't forget we have a really seriously good friend in MasterCard.
Who's that?
In Fernanda.
Oh, yeah, no, well, that's who I worked for.
Yep.
So she was the one who, I mean, this was a project that initially started, John, you remember this.
Yep.
You know, where she was looking for John and I to help, and John backed out primarily because it required to be there for a huge amount of time, I think.
Okay. I just wanted to remind you of Fernanda.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I talk to Fernanda, I mean, not all the time, but I'm in touch with her also. So, yeah.
Good.
Anyway, so that's what's been going on with me.
Okay, super. So who's got an answer to my 2D barcode and 3D barcode conundrum?
John, what are you up to?
Let's see. I'm on the board of directors of Boy Scouts of America, the YMCA, Learning for Life. I run a scout camp in San Pedro. I'm the treasurer of my homeowners association, and I work 6 days a month.
Nice.
That's all right. Hey.
Are those 6 days filled with doing all the things for those companies or those groups?
That's 6 days a month I do work to feed the McAllister baby factory. Primarily working with credit unions, the co-op continues to be my number one client. In a lot of different areas, primarily M&A. Is that
you?
It's not me.
No, it's not me. Hey, by the way, after John's done, if anybody cares what I'm doing, this is Walt.
Where
I'm
you been?
To tell you. Otherwise, you know, just let's go on.
Where the hell
oh,
you been?
Absolutely, Walt. We didn't even know you were on the phone.
Oh, I joined in later. I was about 5 minutes or 10 minutes late.
All right. Well, let me. So anyway, that's, you know, I do work from time to time with various financial institutions, but I'm still on the issuer side of things, and that's why I'm I'm concerned about 2D, 3D, because I think that there's a play here for folks like PayPal to start working with the retail community and really cut out Visa and MasterCard and the other network switches if, you know, just by marrying the technology of 2D, 3D, and smartphone technology.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
And just route around everybody by embedding payment instructions in the 2D or 3D code. So, you know, that's something I'm toying with on the back of my mind. You all receive the trend watch that I write each quarter. That's, by the way...
Don't get that, Walt.
That sucker's good for a client a quarter. So, you know, if you're thinking about, you know, investing a little bit of your personal time in marketing, you know, all you have to do is stick your tongue next to your cheek and start writing and send it out, and you'll get a response, I guarantee you, particularly if you're a little pissy like I was when I just published a point of view for prepaid media, the pay-before folks, where I suggested that we ought to leapfrog the UK, and instead of banning checks, we ought to ban DDA accounts and replace them with prepaid cards. And you can't believe the firestorm that brought.
No can I.
You know, a lot of folks saying, God, right on, somebody should have said this years ago. The other guy saying, you ought to be institutionalized, my friend. But that's what happens when you're controversial. So if anybody's got any insight into what the hell's going on with 2D, 3D, I'd appreciate it. Otherwise, Walt, why don't you let us know what you've been doing, man?
All right. And it doesn't sound quite as enjoyable as what you've been doing, John. Like I've heard from a lot of you, last year was less than a spectacular year. And revenue-wise, I think we were down about 30 to 40%. I haven't finished all the calculations. Business was pretty good through the first half of the year. It was okay through the third quarter, long about October, early November. It was like somebody turned off a faucet. I think what happened is a lot of companies kept going with their programs and kind of ignored I guess smaller budgets, thinking that June would come and things would look better and they'd revise them for the last half of the year, and that just didn't happen. But, you know, I've been paying the bills and keeping busy, and the beginning of this year looks really strong. If some of the areas where I've been busy, I mean, one of the things is I've been able to hook up with several other people, mostly in the operations and technology area, and sell their services too, and I think that's one of the things that's made us a successful, in that we're dealing with such large companies. If we have a little more mass, I think they perceive us to have a little more value and a little more worthy of them working with us, as opposed to me trying to, you know, being a lone ego. Anyway, some of the areas. Prepaid has been paying a lot of bills. And, I mean, you know, if you read anything, prepaid is pretty hot. I've got several. A lot of these things I can't talk about, but probably the most interesting thing that's just starting to move is we're working with a company defining a competitive product to Green Dot. And it focuses on underserved and unbanked markets. And then there's other functions and features that we're bundling into it. But that looks exciting. Second area that's been really interesting is small group transaction clearing and settlement networks. And it's almost like banks are looking for ways, and it almost doesn't make sense because it's such a pissant amount of money that the Federal Reserve really tries to charge for this service, but they're looking for ways to take the Fed out. This isn't just banks, it's banks and payment processors.
So this is like creating bilateral agreements?
I'm not really bilateral. It's sort of like a bilateral where 6 or 8 different or 20 or 200 different institutions decide to play.
Yep. So it's sub-switching.
Yeah, it's sub-switching. And they're doing things like accelerated settlement and other kinds of value-added product or services that they're going to layer on top of this infrastructure. The third area is ACH. Quite a bit of ACH work, mostly because just about everyone, and this includes companies like PayPal or even small payment processors or anybody except an issuer, is really looking for a way to take a card payment, whether it's signature debit or credit. Nobody cares much about PIN debit because they're not very expensive. And then transform it into an ACH payment in order to reduce the amount of interchange that the merchant has to pay.
Yep.
And
so you're an MPC guy.
Yeah.
As opposed to somebody else on this call who's probably an EPC guy. That would be me.
Well, I've been doing it actually does create some interesting conflicts because one of our larger customers is MasterCard.
Yeah.
And actually, we've been doing some ACH projects for them, too. I think mostly because you want to understand what the enemy looks like.
Yeah.
I think, looking ahead for next year, some of these programs are just going to keep going. I do work with Fidelity and Metavante, and they have some integration work. I'm not sure whether we're going to do this because they have to keep projects going concurrent with integration work, so I'm not sure what side of the line we're going to fall on. But looking at next year, the issue with ACI's Base 24 Classic system is going to be boiling. It's just starting to get warm. Banks and processors have largely been ignoring. What ACI did, for those of you who don't know, is they put a sunset date of November 2011 on their Base 24 Classic product. And what that does is it impacts a lot of big banks like Wells, JP Morgan Chase, payment processors like Fiserv and what was Metavante, U.S. Bank.
First Data.
And payment processors and financial institutions all over the world.
As well as the retailers.
Yeah, absolutely, Maria. And they're serious as death about that. They've had knock them down, drag them out, close the briefcases, swear at each other, get up and walk out meetings with some of their largest customers, including JP Morgan Chase. Because what some of these banks want to do is they said, hey, look, and Chase just finished doing this a year or two ago. They paid $15 million to ACI to build their ATM driving system with all the nice little multiple languages and preferences and everything that goes with it. Well, now, a year later, ACI comes along and tells them, in 2 years, we're going to sunset this product that you just paid us all this money to build.
Yeah. That's exactly with First Data.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same scenario, and they're saying, I'm not going to do it again. Give me the source code. And ACI is saying, no, we're not giving you the source code. And they're saying, well, no, you don't understand. We're not going to migrate to EPS. And by the way, there's a lot of problems with EPS because I helped put that in MasterCard, and it is nowhere near ready for prime time. But, I mean, it's getting there, and maybe a year or 2 years or 3 years from now, it's going to be a very nice product, but right now there's a lot of gaps and white spaces in it.
But anyway, what it means is there's a whole bunch of very discombobulated customers out there.
Banks like Bank of America are simply saying, we just don't care what we do, but we're not going to do business with ACI anymore, because what it is they feel wronged. And
What are the chances that the industry, the user industry of this ACI code says, well, screw you, you tried to, they tried to kill PEP and PEP Plus too, and we said screw that, and we were running 25-year-old systems to clear ACH transactions. Why don't these guys just say screw you, and you know, we'll take the code and we'll modify it any way we want. We don't need your source code. We'll take an image and play with that.
The organizations that have big development behind infrastructure behind them are doing exactly that. The other thing that's happening is that now, as long as organizations are relooking at their sunsetted solution, it's opening up a lot of opportunities for RFPs. And I will tell you firsthand that the folks at S1, at least the folks I know on the retail side, have been picking off clients left and right from ACI.
Well, absolutely. You know, I've got a couple of contacts in the U.S. who have for the last year and a half been earning seriously good money from this sunsetting exercise just in body shopping. They used to be consultants. Now they just body shop.
Yeah, but...
Right? The only issue that I came up against, because I was fairly convinced that this was a done deal until I was talking to some colleagues in Europe who said, well, not necessarily, because ACI and let me think of who it was. It was either Amex or somebody else. No, not Amex, but if not Amex, Barclaycard or somebody else, really big in Europe, seemed to have come to some conclusion with ACI, where ACI would continue to support the old base 24 product plus its supposed next of kin. But whatever it was, help me here.
Whoever.
This is what they've offered to some of the banks I've been working with.
They came to a conclusion that, you know, basically they'd support it for a little bit longer, but not publicly. Okay? You know, the short answer is this is on its way out. The general consensus from Gartner or otherwise seems to be that whatever ACI's options are, they're not up to industry standard as they stand at present. Now, that seems to be, for whatever you want to read to it, an opportunity for anybody who decides they're not going to stay hung in there with ACI. Okay? So, you know, that's my only message, is that it's not for me, because I can't go down into the devil and the detail in the code and everything else, and that's for the likes of Paul. But there is a serious, I think, business opportunity here.
Don, you said that you thought that organizations might be taking that code in-house and just supporting it themselves. Are you seeing any indication that they've actually taken that on?
There's a couple of issues here. First of all, you got to remember that Microsoft XP is 10 years old, and Microsoft said that they're going to stop supporting that software next year. You think that that's the case? I mean, there's still version 1.0 sitting out there running on some machines.
Yeah.
I think this code's going to be around for a long time. My experience has been, in three cases I've talked with private equity guys and about the prospect of putting up a company to stand into ACI's shoes with respect to this code. And, you know, there's a lot of money sitting there on the sidelines in private equity. Private equity was down 68% last year over year, by the way. And, you know, there's a lot of money sitting out there waiting for somebody to come up with a solution that, you know, creates a bridge to sanity with respect to what ACI is doing. And I think Piers is right. The question that I have in my mind is who do you play with? Do you work with the financial institutions and processors that own this stuff or have it and got the problem, and you help them solve the problem directly, or do you work with these organizations that are starting to cluster in Australia, Asia Pacific? There's a big group down there, or in the Midwest, particularly in Colorado, where there's a group of guys that are coming together, or do you find somebody in the private equity sector who's looking to fund somebody and work with them to pull together the pieces and parts necessary to get it done?
Well, the problem, John, the problem that, well, that's causing some of the banks to hesitate is just the amount of code that they don't have, and it's in
yeah.
And unless you can get that source code, and so far you see I said, no, we're not going to do it, and we're not interested in selling it, which is a huge bet on their part.
Isn't that an opportunity for you and Paul?
Well, wait a second. Just let me finish here. What happens, though, is, and there's some other issues here, too, and there are concerns. One of the issues is Guardian and where, not so much Guardian, but where some of the compilers and systems that they need, like TAL and Pathway, are to run it, and the integrity of those and HP's commitment to those. And, minimally, just because those things may change or in some way or Guardian may change, you got to be able to get at all that foundation stuff that you don't have code for, source code for, because it could be impacted by changes in that operating system. Now, the other part of that to build things, many times you need to go beyond, like to build a device handler or some PIs or some other services. You got to go beyond the limits of the source code that they provide you with. And so there are some real serious questions that unless somehow ACI is willing to sell or release the source code, or a group of customers are able to create a class action suit that forces the escrow deposits to be released, you got an issue.
Okay, but in either way, at a commercial level, at an executive level, there have to be a whole bunch of guys in the USA, which is what our focus is on, there have to be a whole bunch of guys who are still very, very, very concerned about the fact they're running on Base 24 and they don't know where the future lies.
Oh, yes, they are very... very concerned. They're still at some of the big banks, like U.S. Bank or J.P. Morgan Chase or processors. They're still in the middle of kind of a chicken in the tracks game, chicken on the tracks, figuring that they're going to get ACI to back down. My own read, having had serious dialogues with Heasley and others, is it's not going to happen.
Well, that's opportunity, whichever way it goes.
Mm-hmm. What happened is that company, just some background so you understand what's going on, is they invested a massive amount of money in fraud detection in that product. They expected that to be a home run. That's turned out kind of to be so-so. And what they're really looking for is the reason they're forcing the Base 24 EPS issue is that gives them systems integration work, a lot of it. It gives them, a lot of it goes offshore, by the way, to India. It gives them a whole new set of license fees for software. The volume pricing and the maintenance go on just like they are now. And what it also does is it allows them to manage their expenses better because now they're going to be able to support one product rather than two. Because Classic is just very, very different. Now, they are also getting money from IBM, but that's been cut back some because their relationship hasn't been too good to develop and promote and force the EPS issue.
So where's the entry point for a bunch of goofy consultants in California and the rest of the United States with a focus on Latin America, Central America, and North America, and then a window into Europe? Where's the play here? Is there a play?
I think the play is, it's hard. ACI is not likely to give source code to a
And I think what the play is creating a credible disciplined migration path from base to, and I mean these are going to be really pig ugly migrations, but from base 20 classic to either EPS or Postillion in the case of S1, and you could say to Advantage, but I'm not sure Advantage, first of all, the Fidelity is kind of fussy about who they license it to and who they don't. I don't know how serious they really are about software. And they've got the same issues with the Guardian operating system. I don't even know if some of these things like TAL and Pathway are going to even be viable products if that ACI install base rolls off of them.
So let me ask you another question.
Can I interject? Maybe there's a new player that could emerge from India who could build this base 24 replica software from scratch in the next 18 months, and have it ready.
What? Running on tandem or running on Guardian or Pathway? Are you saying, Stu, or
running on whatever platform? The Chase and FDR and Bank of America and the other players want it to run on.
Well, I'm going to add to that a couple of names. And I've already sent you an email. I'll tell you who I'm associated with. So, Open Kimono, as Jack used to say, Distra and Alaric.
Yep.
And I will send you this paper, but, I would urge you to look at both of these guys. Both of these guys are tentative. Actually, Alaric, who I've hosted for about the last year, now they've teamed up with Oracle. Their contract with me is pretty much dead. I mean, in terms of serious stuff. But, Alaric is a serious player out of Europe or UK, and Distra is out of Australia plus some other stuff. I'll send you some stuff on that. It'll be in the paper, but I give it to you, and frankly, other than the UTech guys on this call, you can forget about it because you won't make any more sense of it than I do. Or maybe you will. Sorry.
Sorry.
But at least the tech guys can make some sense of it.
The other thing, though, that ACI is doing to tilt the table in their favor, first of all, what Pierce said is absolutely correct. What they're doing is if you want to continue on base 24 classic, what they will do is they will sell you compliance updates and product enhancements on a time and material basis. They will continue to do emergency fixes as long as you continue to pay their maintenance and their volume fees.
Yeah, but that's just cancer treatment.
Well, that's not going to be acceptable because it's,
well, not
the response time, the cost, everything else is going to be a problem. Now, what they have also said is if you, and I think some of these big banks are kind of backing themselves into a position where they may have to do this because most of them are looking at two-year migrations. If you look at something like U.S. Bank with their processing business too, that's a three-year or even longer migration. But what you're looking at is what they're saying is if you sign a contract and are in the process of implementing base 24 EPS, which you will be for at least 3 or 4 years, if everything goes well. It took Visa 4 years to implement it in Europe with VisaNet. It took MasterCard is in year 3, and they're really not done yet. But if you have that kind of a – if you're migrating to base 24 EPS, they'll continue to support you just like they do today, whatever that means, with the same economics and no additional fees. So,
So what we mean is that if we're looking at opportunity, at least for the techie guys on this call, which I don't count myself as one. But you know, we're looking at a fault line here, which has actually been around for about a year, but is getting more and more acute, which is what processes, what systems do we use, A, relative to debit, B, relative to ACH, and C, relative to a bunch of other switching solutions. And ACI looks like it's wounded.
Yeah, I mean, just to be realistic, when you start looking at what's out there now, if you want to do this yourself, I mean, if you outsource, there's lots of options. But if you want to do this yourself and you're a large player, I mean, your choices are, with Base 24 Classic, pretty much, you know, its risk profile at this point kind of pushes it off the table. But if you're not going to have that, your choice is Postillion, which is real good terminal driving software, but it's not really built. It's
full scale.
The operations, utilities, and some of those things for a service bureau, and it's, you know, it's missing some back-end connectivity. It's missing some things. The other option is Base 24 EPS, which has white spaces and holes in it. And, you know, when you take either of those products and compare it to the products that are Base 24 Classic, they both fall far short. I mean, your other option is Advantage, which, if you can work out a license agreement with Fidelity, which if you're a bank, you probably can. If you're a payment processor, it's going to be quite a bit harder. You're still in the Guardian muck, and there's some real question marks about that because Tandem's, even before it was owned by HP, in the early 90s, Tandem was warning about the longevity and future of Guardian.
Walt, I have a question to ask you. I've had an opportunity on two occasions now to moderate an industry panel on Enterprise Payment Hub.
Yes.
Which looks like Base 24 on steroids. It doesn't just deal with card-based related solutions. It also deals with ACH, the retail side, the wholesale side, and there are some competitors in that space, the likes of Sterling Commerce, Clear Commerce, ACI has a toehold in it, and S1, but they're all competing now for what looks to be the superset of what Base 24 has to offer. I'd be interested in what you're seeing relative to developments on that front, as long as people are reassessing what they're going to put into place, whether they'll take on the implementation of an enterprise payment hub, perhaps in a phased-in fashion, because obviously the big bang approach is going to be too much for anyone to bite off.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some serious conversations with people at Fidelity in Jacksonville about this, not Fidelity eFunds.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked about it with MasterCard, mostly to kind of answer the same kind of question you're asking yourself, not really thinking that they run off and do this. I mean, Fiserv is playing with this a little bit.
Right.
And what they're really, what most of them are taking Payment Hub to mean, and I mean, this is very different from what ACI is presenting, is what they're really saying is, it's really payment transformation. What they're really saying is, can I take an ACH payment and do something like VocaLink does with faster payments and turn it into a real-time payment and settlement? And the big problem people see with this is they see the question is, how do I get from where I am now to Payment Hub? Because it's not, I mean, if the world ends or reinvents itself on December 21st, 2012, just about everybody would come up with a payments hub. But unfortunately, you've got all these legacy systems and processes and procedures and training and everything that's invested in how it works today. And getting from today to the payment hub, other than just for payment transformation or very specific purposes, that's really where the obstacle is. Nobody is arguing with the religion. They just haven't figured out how to convert.
So maybe...
I'm going to complete on my conversation on this. I have good contacts with both Alaric and with Distra, who possibly, as technologies or systems or whatever, have some answers here. Now, actually, funnily enough, Distra has not yet attacked the U.S. market, although they have a position, let's say, rest of world. Alaric have just, who I have been representing, have just tied a deal with Oracle in relation to some of their other interests. Leave it aside, there's two potential players. I will send you the document.
Okay.
You guys go look at it. There are plenty of players, as we've heard. But if you see any opportunities there, then this certainly seems, whether or not my guys have got opportunities or otherwise, okay, it could be ACI is going to be the winner. I don't know. But everything I see says ACI is going to be a loser in this battle. And, so it's up for grabs. And
I think there's very little chance. I mean, this has to be a big player. It's got to be one of the payment processing conglomerates or most likely a tier one or definite or larger tier two bank that decides to bite this off. It's not going to be a little guy. It's not going to be Wasa Payments or somebody like that.
I'll go with you, Walt. I'm just saying this is possibly an opportunity for everybody listening on this.
Yeah, I think it is. What we have to do, I agree with you on ACI. I mean, their credibility in those market segments is there is no credibility. No bank would put all of their payment systems in the hands of ACI right now. And maybe they'll get over it. A lot of people get mad at this stage of I don't know if I'd call it a sales process. I don't know exactly what I'd call it. But
not a loss of sales process.
It's like it's not quite a divorce. So I could see a sales process, a divorce. I'm not sure what you'd exactly call this thing. Maybe collective bargaining or something. I don't know. But nobody would sign up with ACI to build a payment hub right now.
So
the sad thing is, I won't earn any fees out of this piece of the conversation at all, but I will certainly forward it on to you all.
Yeah. I mean, I think the play is payment hub, but not payment hub. The altruistic view is, we'll create one set of authentication processes for it's really another way of saying a service-oriented architecture, but one set of authentication processes, one settlement. There's a whole series of functions that ACI have defined. Unfortunately, each of those were quite different for different payment instruments, so I don't know how they're going to collapse together without really changing regulations and business practices, but anyway, I think the way we're going to see it roll out is it's going to roll out as payment transformation so that, we were talking about transforming a signature debit payment into an ACH payment, something PayPal would very much like to do and has been pursuing. But, I think what we're going to do is we're going to have payment hub as a mechanism for payment transformation, not payment hub for payment hub's sake.
Which means the kings of this game are going to be the guys who provide the switching software.
Yeah, and I think the losers are going to be the issuers who collect interchange. and MasterCard, Visa, Amex, and Discover who get their branding and switching fees, because what everybody wants to, what the merchants want to do.
It's 15 cents a pop.
Yeah, they want to pay them less.
So today Microsoft announced concurrently with Hewlett-Packard that they're putting together a $250 million pool to invest in cloud computing for the banking industry. How does that change everything?
Well, to begin with, if you could explain it to a banker, I don't.
Which banker do you mean? Do you mean the one who earns $2 million and doesn't give a shit? Or the banker who is employed at, you know, $100,000 a year and is only focused on technology?
Well, over here, Pierce, everybody who could understand what cloud computing is got paid too
but
much.
It's not the guy who earns $1 million plus.
But it's probably, I think you'd have trouble walking through a bank data processing center finding anyone who even remotely knew what it was.
So, Paul, what's the impact of cloud computing on the merchant acquirer side?
Well, I think it's interesting. I came into this conversation, I think, just as Maria was saying something, which I think I'm going to try to pick up on here. But certainly the whole concept of PCI and the issues with data security kind of, in one sense, lend to the idea of moving towards a cloud computing infrastructure,
yeah.
And as well as, you know, other things related to cost and so forth. So,
have you had a chance to look at Microsoft Azure yet? Azure?
No, I haven't.
You might want to take a look at that. It's pretty cool stuff.
Okay, thank you.
Azure. It's Azure. You know, it's basically most of it. You know, I hope there's more there than slideware. But if it is as it's advertised of being, and it's in a cloud, it would seem to me that, you know, we have things available to us like Payment Hub, like intelligent routing or low cost routing. The whole notion that I think you're referring to in Maria's conversation was this whole authentication, authorization out, you know, pushing that out of the merchant environment to avoid, you know, the whole PCI crap. But, you know,
no.
It just seems to me that you got Microsoft and HP. HP in there obviously wanting to sell some gear. Microsoft wants to sell some code. And, you know, they're taking the path of least resistance. They don't want to take on Fidelity. They don't want to take on the other guys in the market space, ACI. So you do what you need to do. You change the basis of competition,
yep.
And you put together a new approach to getting the same thing done that, you know, avoids having to, you know, fight tooth and nail for market space.
Right. Certainly the whole concept of virtualization has really been a driver on this too. Virtualization technology has really taken root, and it's huge, you know.
Yep.
The way that it's adopted by large organizations now, so and it really lends itself to the cloud environment, you know, because you can do anything basically remotely without a problem with extremely good performance, you know. So.
Yeah, I think Walt's right. My sense of it is that, you know, it's just like, it's like asking a bank to change their rules on credit risk or something. You know, oh, no, we can't do that. You know, I mean, the idea of, you know, back when we were with Perot, you know, the idea of those guys, banks even wanting to outsource anything. You know, God forbid we should send all of our precious jewels over to India and get them stolen or something like that. Well, you know, they finally figured it out that that was stupid. And, of course, they won't understand the cloud. And, as I say, Walt's right. We've got a decade to teach those idiots what that's all about. It would seem to me that given those two fundamental truths, that, you know, the organizations that will be most susceptible to a sales pitch for cloud computing, are, at least in our space, in the payments world, is going to be on the acquiring side of this stuff, not the issuing side. Because the issuers got their own damn problems, ACI being in the forefront of them.
I mean, that's one of the areas I was thinking as we were talking. and I played around with this idea a lot, and I think probably the right triggering event just wasn't around at the time, and maybe Base 24 sunsetting the classic product is a triggering event. But, and this is a lot of work. This isn't something that you could do easily. So we'd need some partners. But all these ATMs, the current generation ATMs like Optiva and everything NCR and Diebold has, not necessarily the off-premise kind of stuff, but they are really computers in their own right, and they have been for a long period of time. And you could really implement a Base 24 replacement terminal driving system using pieces and parts and a cloud computing construct. And I think you can drop the cost here to a payment processor. You can drop the cost by maybe 30% for a per transaction basis. But here again, it comes down to kind of what you, how do you get from, you know, even with what ACI is doing, and it would almost take, you know, this is kind of at the beginning, I said, you know, you get a group of people and you have more mass. This may be a tremendous opportunity for us on the phone as a group where we can collaborate and have enough mass to be credible saying, look, you guys, you know, because they're going to be off of Base 24 Classic one way or another in the next 3 years. Because, you know, unless ACI just completely reverses itself. And if you took a product, and it could be, you know, Postillion, or it could be Base 24 EPS, but I don't think, you know, the volume license issue where they charge for volume is an obstacle, and it could be an IST switch kind of product where you take some of the components that they've already built, like an authorization system and some of the processor interfaces, and instantiate these on servers in kind of a cloud computing environment where you look at the ATMs as just other servers and you start shooting these messages around. I mean, it could be through the Internet, but most likely it would be through some kind of private IP network because you'd still get the same benefits. I think it has a tremendous cost advantage.
I agree.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we can. And Paul, I think you know, I think it's doable. I mean, if you think about it, this was a while ago, but when it wasn't eFunds, it was Deluxe at the time, when they built that whole Connect system from scratch, it was a $10 million build. I mean, afterwards they had lots of maintenance and enhancements and new components that would probably make their investment $40 or $50 million or more in the software. But if you started with a license of Postillion, which runs around $1 million, and there's no volume or anything that goes with it, broke it off into pieces so that authorization processing ran on a server, you know, just to create kind of a true, how you'd really deploy a system like that if you were operating in a server-based environment, rather than trying to make a central mainframe monolithic system look like it's server-based. But if you truly distributed and viewed all these ATMs as servers too, I think you could make, and you wouldn't actually even need routing because you could use the IP network routers for routing. It's just a different way of doing it. And there's just some tremendous things you could do, even things like, you know, all this software, it does transaction timing and retries and alternate routing, and all it does it just like it was 1983. All that really is handled by an IP network today. I mean, you don't really need that.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's as has been the case over time, and almost to the point where it's accelerated, is you can, the computing power that you can buy now is amazing with a, basically a 8 processor PC for under $10,000. That this is amazingly powerful. You know,
right. I could probably run 100 ATM network off
this virtualization that can run.
I have on my desk. I mean, it's
multiple,
amazing. I mean, you don't even need central authorization files anymore, like AP. You can, because you have terabytes in these ATMs. You can download the authorization file to every single ATM if you have to.
Exactly. Exactly. The storage isn't the issue anymore.
Yeah. So what I'm thinking, but like, you know, I'm
like,
none of us individual small companies can, you know, have enough cred, have enough, I guess, scale, or I should say, because this is a case where you need size to be credible, and people will talk about this with you, but they never hire you to build one because they don't think you could finish it.
Yep. Hey, guys, I apologize, but I've got a hard stop in 10 minutes, and I just wanted to kind of and that doesn't mean that you guys have to leave. I just have to leave the call. I got sort of like Suzanne. I got tradesmen working on my house as well. Any other subject matters that we want to get on the table and kick around for a bit?
I wanted to hear what Nosher was up to.
Yeah, so do I.
Well, I just had lunch with Nosher, so I know what that is. So. And it's kind of, you know, interesting stuff. So if you don't mind, I'm going to step out. I appreciate you all taking the time to kind of participate in this thing.
Thanks for setting it up, John.
I learned a lot. Thanks, Kendall, for using your bridge line. That's very nice of you. If you would, Kendall, you're going to send that MP3 over to Ashwin?
Yeah, what I'm going to do is I'm going to post it somewhere. It's going to be huge. So I'll post it somewhere and send the link to everybody.
Oh, fine. That'd be great. Guys, I appreciate your time and contributions. I'm a lot smarter than I was an hour and a half ago, and that was kind of the reason I thought we ought to get together, because I think collectively we're smarter than we are individually.
I think we should do it again.
Okay.
In like a week.
A week?
Should do it again in a week.
And
you know, this is not just for discussion, but for action.
Well, I'm willing to participate in anything. A week would be too short for me since I got next week's my volunteer week. But
two weeks
would be fine. Send me your thoughts on open dates and what you'd like to get accomplished. I'm not sure that action is something that I was particularly looking for in this, other than the action of, you know, people actively thinking and talking about what's going on in the industry. If something positive can come out of it that involves some bilateral, trilateral group action, that's fine too. But, you know, remember, it was not my targeted endeavor here, but if it's the target of the rest of you guys, then that's fine. So I'm gonna sign off.
I'm going to die soon, so...
You're going to die?
Well, not in the next 2 weeks.
He's been saying that for several years now.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. All right. I now understand what you're talking about, Pierce. All right. Couple of weeks. Do me a favor. Send 2 weeks from now. Today's the 13th, so 2 weeks is the 20th, Wednesday. Send me a list of what dates are bad that week, and we'll set something up.
Yeah, we'll see who's interested.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Take care.
I'll talk to you. Thanks a million.
Thanks, John.
No, sure. Are you still on?
Yeah, I'm on.
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, it's been a fascinating conversation. I don't really know how much I can add because whereas John has been purposefully out of the play, I've been a little less purposefully out of the play.
Oh, come on, Nosher. Let us know what you're doing.
I'm not doing a whole lot. But what I am doing is... you know, sort of talking to some folks who might have an interest in India. It's primarily been kind of an India-based focus, and I haven't had, you know, I haven't been that busy. I'd love to be more busy.
That amazes me, Nosher. You're focusing into the second largest emerging economy with substantial advantages over most of us, and you're telling me you're doing nothing?
I'm not doing a whole lot. I didn't say I'm doing nothing. But the point is that, you know, it's all very well to talk about an emerging economy, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, by the time people have woken up over here to the fact that it's as large as it is, you know, a lot of the sort of fundamental business has already been taken, and so now the new business, you know, goes to the incumbents as opposed to new entrants.
Yeah.
And the environment there is very, very challenging, you know, to, you know, on bids and stuff.
Where are you focused? I mean, you know, seriously, are you focused, India-focused, or are you just focused generally?
Look, I'm just not working as much as I would like, okay? That's the bottom line. Having been out of the play for 4 years in terms of the U.S. consulting gig, you know, I've actually even spoken to folks like John and said, hey, if you guys get some work that you'd like not to do, you know, I'd be happy to do it. But, so in that sense, you know, I just am not as active as all of the rest of you, and I'm certainly not as, you know, I have a lot of admiration for Maria in terms of the way that she stayed active on the marketing front, but she's always been good at the networking bit.
Oh, but, absolutely. I mean, Maria, by the way, hello. When you and I last spoke 6 months ago, you were down somewhere in a major trough. Last time I know, you've got about 3 contracts, so, you know, hey.
Well, I'm not out of the trough yet, but I do know people.
three contracts at less than base price has to be good.
Anyway, so...
Hey, Pierce, we want to be eating out of the trough, not in the trough.
Exactly.
Well, in any event, you know, the place where I can potentially help or where we might be able to develop some intersections, you know, would really be internationally oriented and at least at the moment. And, you know, to the extent that, you know, folks are willing to kind of do something out or in that part of the world, you know, there might be something that develops. But... at this point, it's still all very low-key, and, you know, I'd like to be busier, but I have the occasional project here or there, but nothing really significant. In fact, I told John that, you know, I didn't think I had a whole lot to contribute to this, you know, to this meeting, and that I would really be more in a learning mode than, you know, than in a contributing mode.
So did you
want to talk about some of the issues of entering an emerging market and stuff like that? I'd be happy to talk about those, but, you know.
Well, I'm going to say to you, Nosha, you and I need a side conversation about India at some point in time. I think we had one about 6 months ago, and you seem similarly diffident, and I don't know why, but, you know, whatever, you know.
I seemed what?
You're sitting on top of the second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever it is, national economy or national developing economy, and you've got, you know, both ethnic plus, what is it, last 6 years, sitting there, living there, knowing all the people at pretty high level. And if you can't leverage that, then you're not the person I thought you were.
Maybe I'm not.
Maybe not. Who knows? You know, all of us disappoint ourselves. Yikes.
Well, I mean, all right. I mean, fine.
Okay.
Just have a side conversation, certainly. The, you know.
There's a comment, Nosha.
Pardon? Sorry?
I said take it as a comment.
Oh, okay. All right. No problem.
No problem. I know you got stuff going on, you know, so don't worry about it, you know, but when you get to it.
Hey, guys, I apologize. I have to drop off. I really appreciate talking to everybody. It's been great. So thank you, and I hope we can get together again soon.
See you, Paul.
Okay, take care, everybody. Bye.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting up to the top
phone
of
now.
Too.
Who's that?
My limit's 1, 2.
Yeah.
Who's that?
All right. So it sounds like we've got a game plan to move ahead.
Hey, Maria.
is next
yeah,
up.
I would agree. I'm not sure a 2-week phone call is necessary. I've got some food for thought here, and I want to run with it a little bit and talk to some of you offline about some possibilities. I'm thinking maybe this is a monthly call.
Yeah, I think that seems like about right to me too. And Stuart, I'd like to follow up with you because this remittance area has been something that's kind of near and dear to my heart. I just haven't been able to find someone to
play in that area. Well, that's good. That's good. There's a huge intersection with prepay.
Yes.
Prepaid market is the unbanked market, and guess what? They turn out to be the immigrants, and the immigrants are the ones who drive the remittances.
That's exactly the case. And while your comment about how prepaid has been a viable marketplace and the work that's ongoing now in terms of building more functionality is also something that has been, you know, it's been keeping a lot of companies afloat in this really troublesome time. So
if there
are opportunities along that front to leverage things either in the prepaid and or mobile combined with remittance, that would certainly be of interest. So I think
there's a strong
on that
prepaid, especially in unbanked and underserved segments and mobile. I mean, literally, there's more mobile phones in the world than there are toothbrushes.
Yeah.
So to roll out that kind of product without a mobile distribution channel is, I think you're missing your market. I mean, I think that's
where it's going. It's where it's going. I was at a conference about a year ago. It was sponsored by the Inter-American Development Bank. And the guy was rather prescient. Actually, he was an Indian. The guy's name was Ahmed Mehta from the Inter-American Development Bank. And talk about globalization. He put up a slide that I thought was very fascinating. He said there were on the order of 250, there were on the order of a half million ATMs in the world. There were on the order of 10 million point of sale devices. He was just counting merchants. He said that's growing so rapidly that no one has a figure. If someone wanted to say it was 20 million point of sale devices, he wouldn't be surprised. But he said the cell phones are in the billions.
Yeah.
And he said if what you're trying to do is extend banking services to people, use the device that they have in their hand.
Okay,
if you want some feedback on this whole issue, India has 500 million cell phones right now, and they're growing at 10 million a month.
Right.
It's
phenomenal. Phenomenal. I know businesses were established in India where a village would buy a cell phone and then rent it out to the other village members just to get market information about what the price of rice was, either to sell or to buy in the market that was 50 miles away.
And Kenya.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Worldwide. These were little micro businesses that got funded all over the place. Incidentally, that's another interest of mine is micro lending. So if anybody's got somebody who's been talking about that field, I've done quite a bit of work research in it. I haven't had a client in it, but it's an interest. I'll put it back.
Okay, I'd
call Walmart because I think
you could do it on your own time.
Banks have largely taken themselves out of the lending game by choice, and that's one of the things I'm most fearful about is, you know, many banks just aren't loaning money unless you want to borrow it out of credit card at 20 or 30%. So you have to start saying, where is the banking industry really going? And I think what they've done is created this tremendous opportunity for anybody who wants to jump in and do what banks have done. This can be Walmart, it can be God, just about anybody. And what's more, Congress and is so pissed at them that
they'll give them a license. Do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I have to sign off. Thanks for all of you. Generosity of your time. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
Absolutely.
I was a pleasure.
Hey, by the way, love you too.
love everyone. All right, bye.
Thanks, guys.
I really love Maria.
I I think we've lost the critical mass.
I think we do.
You're right.
So who's left?
Yeah, but I think we've got food for thought, and we ought to be talking to one another a little bit more about how we can create critical mass.
I think it was a worthwhile conversation, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so too. Walt's point about surviving, I think he's right that unless we create, this is maybe the a topic for the next conversation. But as individuals, I don't think we have the critical mass of gravitas to work
very well. I disagree with you. I mean, I'm not sure what the focus of the gravitas might be. Forget that for the moment. All right? You have a serious, at least I think you have, still, you know, and of course you disagree with me, same as I disagree with my contacts in Latin America. But yours are probably better than mine, and certainly your Spanish is better than mine. And so I would certainly encourage you to review, reinvigorate, or whatever it is, your contacts for 2010 in Latin America, because basically anything that this group of guys, and this group of guys is fairly smart, and there are others out there that we don't need to rely on, right? Others. But, you know, just take this group. They're fairly smart and well worth, you know, well, I'm not sure there's anything that came out of today that is worth forwarding on. But in a month's time, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Walt, are you still with us?
You sound unconvinced.
No, what I'm talking about is consortium plays, where we start to just associate with ourselves a little bit more. Among us.
Okay, so us and a bank and a proposition.
Right.
Okay, well, you know, then that might be your take on this conference call.
It's part of my take. It's just part.
People say, yeah.
That's part.
Why don't we focus on, you know, business? All right? Because, you know, it's great for us to talk amongst ourselves, but what the hell is the business proposition?
Right.
And,
Here,
you know,
just you and I, or do we have anybody else?
Sorry?
Do we have anybody else, or is it just you and I?
No, it's me. I'm Kendall. I'm on also.
Oh, Kendall's still there?
Absolutely.
Hey, Kendall,
why would I just drop off without saying so?
Walt? Hey, Kendall.
What's
Walt?
That?
How are you
Walt.
Doing?
Walt on?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Yeah, I think it's just the three of us.
Okay, well, I hope your dad's good. I know that you two guys are probably 1,000 miles apart or something of the sort.
Yeah, we're just about that, yeah.
Anyway, I did have a email exchange with your dad about a month ago or so, Christmas time, I guess, or New Year. Anyway, good to know that you're good.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what the hell are you doing with yourself, Kendall?
I did you not hear me tell everybody?
I obviously missed the email.
No, the whole stuff with Interact and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, you have to send me another email.
I will give you. I'll shoot you all my contact info so you have it all.
C. Harley. C.
I got it because you. I got it on have your.
At yahoo.com.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, flip it to me, and I'll catch up with you.
That'd be great.
All right,
guys. I will post the recording of this so we can all be set on that in a little bit. All right?
That sounds good. Thank you.
I actually think that
He did good. You did good. And yeah, there has to be something out of this for one or the other of the participants.
Is there a pony in the stall? Is that what we're saying? Yeah.
No, there's a pony in the ice pick in the haystack or something. No, not
yeah.
Ice. You know, but what do you call it? One of these small little metal things. Yeah.
Whatever.
All right, bye, guys.
All right, guys. I'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Okay. Signing off, too. Take care, guys.